And of course, David Bloom with us, and we'll take phone calls with David. Alcohol can be a gas when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, David, what's going on with Chevron, a refinery fire in Richmond, California? They're having a lot of problems, huh?
Oh, nothing new. I live out here, you know, George. We watch Chevron all go up all the time, you know. But Chevron is famous for having totally slipshod safety and leak management. And so the recent thing is has been, it's a really good example of spin control. You know, you turn lemons into lemonade. So they blow up their refinery, and then they raise the price all around California of gasoline 40 cents, you know. So, gosh, was that a bad thing or a good thing that the refinery blew up? You know? So, you know, the this happens usually in a more benign way.
Nobody hurt?
This time, actually, the guys were, like, staring at the leak going, oh, that doesn't look so bad. And then it cut loose, and they all ran like hell. So, sorry, I can't say that on the radio. But anyway, they...
nobody hurt.
Nobody hurt this time. But that's not usually the case. Like, the Texas City leak just a few years ago, a BP disaster killed almost a dozen people, I think. I mean, it happens all around the world every year that these places are dangerous, you know. We're talking... And the thing about this leak that was so amazing is that it was hydrofluoric acid. Now, people are going to go, well, what's that stuff, Dave? Hydrofluoric acid beats glass. Hydrofluoric acid is wicked stuff. And it's part of this whole idea of severe reforming. And it has to do with the fact that we don't have that nice, sweet, light crude we used to have in the old days. We're scraping the bottom of the oil barrel now, and so we got this heavy, lousy stuff they have to convert into stuff we can use. And so they use these severe processes like, you know, high-pressure hydrofluoric acid to break the oil into more amenable compounds. And so, you know, that's a change. In other words, we're doing riskier things to get the products we need from oil. And really, we're doing riskier things to get oil. So you take a look at the Deepwater Horizon disaster. You know, you and I reported on that extensively.
Oh, sure. It was a disaster of biblical proportions.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing about that is I'm sitting here right on my desk looking at the International Energy Agency World Energy Outlook. And they're showing liquid petroleum starting around year 2007 diving. And by year 2035, there won't be hardly any petroleum from current wells, like, even available. It's just going to be completely exhausted.
Oh, don't tell me you're a peak oil guy, David.
No. I didn't say that. Okay. The oil that's coming from the wells now will be exhausted. So we'll drain those fields by 2035. Now, what they're hoping in between now and then, this is on their chart, is that they'll fill it in with crude oil fields yet to be developed or found. And that's what we call nowadays extreme oil. I mean, it's not that we're running out of oil. We got plenty of oil. It's just that it's the kind of oil like Deepwater Horizon. You got to go down miles and miles below the rock to get to it. And we don't really have the technology that works.
What got you into ethanol? What, I mean, at what point did you wake up and say, this is the way it should be?
Oh, I was tricked into getting into ethanol by a college professor. He was retiring, you know, and so nobody could touch him. You know, I mean, he had got his time in. He was tenured. So he started lying to the students. And he said, you know, if you catch him in a lie, he'll take you out to lunch with a burrito, right? And, you know, the whole thing was, you know, it's his last year. He could fool around, you know, and he wanted to get those bored college students to pay attention. So one day we had this big bottle of yeast fermenting on a table, making alcohol, you know. And we were talking about yeast. I was an ecology major and all this. And he's writing on the board, and he kind of turns around and looks over his shoulder and says, yeah, that stuff in that bottle on the table, run your car. He goes back to the board. Right. So I figure, oh, burrito. And I jump up and I say, you're a liar. He doesn't even, like, you know, respond. He just turns over his shoulder and says, prove it. Ah, he called me out in front of the whole class, you know. So I go to the library, freaking piece of cake. Nothing's ever run a car other than gasoline. Everybody knows that. And I go there, and I find this enormous stack of books all about alcohol for power, alcohol engines.
Hemp, you know, everything.
Everything. And it's like, that was like the moment you realize they've been lying to you.
It was your epiphany.
Right. It was the secret history, primer. You know, here I found out for myself that there was, you know, this whole other history that nobody was talking about. And the more I dug into it, it made me not be a coincidence theorist anymore.
All right, let's go to the phones. First-time caller, we've got Pat in Lancaster, California. Hi, Pat. Go ahead.
Hi, George. It's really a privilege talking to you. And I got a couple big ones for David. I have an HHR with a high-performance engine, and in the book it says not to run anything more than 10% alcohol. Now, and I hear that, I'm listening to the government, they're going to bump it up to 15. There's a lot of us out there that don't have cars that may not be able to run it. But it kind of reminds me of the lead in gasoline. You know, we're
absolutely
going through something like that.
Whole controversy of lead in gasoline was another alcohol story. Because prior to using tetraethyl lead, your story, of course, is that they said, if we go to unleaded, all the engines will be scrapped, and you'll have to rebuild them all. And then, of course, they got rid of the leaded gas, and nothing happened. Nobody had any problems.
Then they started talking about the tubing, the connections would rot away. Remember that?
Well, that was with alcohol, but this was when they went to unleaded. Well, it turns out the lead, tetraethyl lead, ethanol, So basically, prior to tetraethyl lead, oil companies would have to put alcohol in the gas to get the octane high enough to operate in a high-performance vehicle or even in a normal vehicle, because gasoline is only 60-plus octane when it comes out of the refinery. That's not good enough. So the oil companies found out that they could use this horribly toxic chemical called tetraethyl lead, that if they put a little bit of it in the gasoline, it raised the octane an awful lot, and they didn't have to buy alcohol from farmers anymore. And so they did that for 75 years, knowingly polluting the entire environment with lead, of which there is no safe quantity. No safe quantity. The smallest amount you can measure is enough to poison kids and make their neurological systems not develop.
Jeez.
They maintained that position for 75 years until finally the Clean Air Act made them take it out. And what did they put in? Alcohol. Back to the beginning. So anyway, yes, I interrupted your story, but basically, yes, the auto manufacturers say, don't put in more than 10% or don't put in more than 15%. And the reality is, since 1983, there are no cars that cannot run on alcohol, In other words, there's nothing incompatible in your car that will be damaged by alcohol if it's later than 1983. Now, if you've got a car that's older than 1983 and your fuel pump goes out, I'm sorry. I don't have any sympathy. You've gotten your money out of that fuel pump.
You're so vicious.
Yeah.
Are there any countries that are using alcohol-related fuel primarily?
Well, yeah. George, let me remind you, you and I have had a good discussion about Brazil. And mm-hmm. I'll be going down to Brazil soon to a World Alcohol Conference there. But Brazil doesn't buy oil at all anymore for transportation fuel, period, end of sentence. They make alcohol from sugarcane down there, and it replaces all the gasoline and a bunch of other uses as well. And you don't hear about that here. Why would we not hear about something that big in the fifth largest country in the world? This is not some little postage stamp banana republic. Oh, no, bananas make good alcohol too. But when it comes to, this huge country, Brazil, it's like, we don't hear about it. And who makes the cars for Brazil? I mean, you think it's like some weird Russian company or somewhere from
Mm-mm.
Iceland?
Nope, we do.
Well, almost. It's Ford, GM, it's all these little companies you never heard of, And they make them there to run on alcohol, no problem. And, we can't even get that same technology here.
Let's go to Alan in Boston, Massachusetts, east of the Rockies. Hey, Alan, thanks for calling.
Thank you, George. There are a few points I'm sort of going to dispute. First of all,
sure.
You spoke about Brazil. We have a tariff preventing ethanol being imported from Brazil. And you can thank the farmers for that because we're paying a 61 cent per gallon subsidy to pay them.
Wrong. That all got ended this year.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And the second...
But No. Let's finish that one.
Okay. The other thing, too, that you talked about, I'll just bring about Brazil. In Brazil, you can, depending on the cost of it, you can still get a gasoline. The price goes up and down between getting an ethanol or regular gasoline, depending on what it is, the station. But also, with E85, if you bought and filled up a tank, you're only going to get 75% of the mileage that you would get with regular gasoline.
Hold on, David.
It's going to cost you more. Please,
let me
finish. It's going to cost you more money to run your car on E85. And the last point I want to point out is that I don't know who you're talking to, but every technician I've talked to, including Consumer Reports, says that if they put anything more than 10% in the majority of cars in the United States, you're going to ruin the engine, unless it's been built from the factory.
Okay. All right, David, now your turn.
Four questions. Let me see if I can get them all. Okay, first of all, there are no subsidies for alcohol anymore. My wonderful Senator Dianne Feinstein said, oh, no, we can't. Ethanol is causing problems with the subsidies and the budget in the United States, so we have to get rid of those or we have to get rid of school lunches. Well, gosh, what happened? Of course, they got rid of the ethanol subsidies, which have been in place for 20-odd years. But did she do anything about the gasoline subsidies, which are $5.40 a gallon? So ethanol got 61 cents, gasoline got $5.40 in. Well, she didn't do anything about gasoline. Could be that, you know, a lot of her campaign money comes from Occidental Petroleum and Chevron, our favorite company that blows up refineries. Anyway, so, you know, subsidies are gone, and alcohol is still 50 cents a gallon cheaper. Now, can you imagine how much of a cow the oil companies would have if the 50-cent credit was still there and it was a dollar cheaper than oil? Oh, my God, you'd be hearing such howling. So will it wreck your car if it's more than 10%? I'm afraid to say that many, many, many universities in the United States would disagree with the caller because, as I said, everything has been compatible with alcohol since 1983. We converted Daryl Hannah's 1979 Trans Am to alcohol. I mean, that was even before 83. We didn't do anything other than put our kit on it, and it ran just fine, you know, with no failures. We've run it all over the West Coast, up and down the coast, whatever, never have any failures. So it just isn't true. He was saying mileage would drop 25%. That's not true either. The heating value, if you turn the fuel to heat, is 25% less for alcohol than gasoline. But your car is not a heater. What we want out of cars is mileage. Heat is the waste byproduct. Well, it turns out that ethanol more completely turns into power than it does exhaust and waste heat. So although it contains a lower heating value, its mileage is typically only dropping about 10%, 11% on most cars that are designed for gasoline. But we have technology we've invented in the United States that actually gets 22% better mileage on alcohol than it does on the fossil fuel. And do we make those engines here? Nah. The Chinese now make them and put it in their dump trucks and buses. So we invent it, and they put it in. And, you know, you gotta wonder. Let's see, did I get all of
them? You got them all.
Yeah, okay.
Now, let me ask you, the percent of ethanol that they put in fuel now, why do they even do that then, if they're so opposed to it? Why do they put it in there?
Well, you know, history is one of those things that gets slippery, sometimes called the United States of Amnesia, you know. So back during Carter, they said to clean up the air under the Clean Air Act, we had to oxygenate fuel. In other words, you put a little more oxygen in the fuel.
Which is also what the MTBEs were supposed to do.
Correct. Instead of alcohol. Well, you know, so we've been going along oxygenating our fuel at different times with ethanol and MTBE, and it reduces dramatically the hydrocarbons and the carbon monoxide, but especially the carbon monoxide, because in cities, carbon monoxide, you know, when you breathe it in, you don't notice anything, but you're not getting enough air to the brain, you know, and so it damages kids especially. So, you know, government said, nope, we're not going to let that happen. We got to clean up our emissions. So we used to put alcohol in the fuel for that reason. Now, recently, like 10 years ago, I guess now, the oil companies got confronted with the fact that we now have to have renewable fuel. We have to have fuel that doesn't run out. So what the oil companies bargained for is they said, if you're going to have a renewable fuel standard, which each year goes up, And that's why there's all the hysteria and howling about the drought right now, is because they're trying to eliminate the renewable fuel standard. That was put in to replace the oxygenate standard. The oil companies said, you can't have both. We'll fight it tooth and nail if you don't give up the oxygenate standard if you go to the renewable fuel standard. Well, but the Clean Air Act was freaking law. In other words, you cannot pollute the air. There was no way to modify the oxygenate standard at all. The renewable fuel standard, on the other hand, is kind of optional. In other words, you can say, well, we can't afford to do the good thing anymore. You know, we can't be renewable and green, so we're going to just waive that because there's a drought. Or you remember we talked about Oil Patch Perry, the governor of Texas, where he said, oh, the chicken farmers, you know, are paying too much for feed, and so we have to eliminate the renewable fuel standard so chicken farmers can have cheaper feed because ethanol is causing the price of feed to go up. Lie stacked on lie stacked on lie. But the renewable fuel standard can be canceled, you know, and the oxygenate standard couldn't. And the oil companies are going full tilt boogie on trying to eliminate the renewable fuel standard before the end of the Obama administration. So they've gotten rid of our subsidies, and now they're trying to get rid of the regulation that we have to clean up our emissions by putting alcohol in and making the country energy self-sufficient and safe. And if you want to ask somebody's opinion about why we should do that, ask the Army. The Army is mandating in a very short period of time that they want to hit 25% national level of renewable fuel that doesn't rely on oil, because they consider it an incredible security risk. And those of you who want to go into the small-scale business of making alcohol, well, you know, by 2025, the military is spending $7 billion to set up contracts to buy alcohol from you guys to fuel military bases and military vehicles and everything, because they see the next war in the Middle East or maybe in Africa where there's oil. And if they cut off our oil, they cut off our military. So the patriotic thing to do is for us to be making alcohol, and they'll buy it from anybody, because alcohol is alcohol. There's no difference if you make alcohol from potatoes, I mean, you might call it vodka, compared to agave, which would be tequila, but the alcohol is the same. And so it's a very simple substance to produce, unlike Jet A or, you know, other kinds of complex, highly regulated fuels that the military needs. Alcohol is kind of universal.
David, I would assume the American Corn Growers Association endorses the use of corn for ethanol.
You know, I just was on the phone, on email a couple days ago with Gail Lush, who's the, Gail Lush, do you think you might be in favor of alcohol? I don't know. But at any rate, actually the American Corn Growers Association is in favor of alcohol, but not necessarily from corn.
Really?
Yes. They have in their mandate, in their, you know, corporate charter, American Corn Growers Association says, we are in favor of diversifying crop mix to make the American farmer more secure against financial disaster.
All right, David, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment. We're going to take final phone calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'll also tell you what you can expect on tomorrow's Coast to Coast show. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, that's Friday night into Saturday morning, of course, we'll have those open lines. We'll also talk with F.J. Lennon, Devil's Gate. I wonder what that's all about. We'll come back in a moment with David Bloom, by the way. We'll take final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, back to the phones we go with David Bloom. Alan is in La Quinta, California. Hey, Alan, go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. Great to talk to you. I think that Alan from Boston, he must have been working for Exxon. I want to say that in Brazil, David, I need to confirm this, don't they, their production line vehicles that they produce, aren't those vehicles running on ethanol with a 10% water content in it as well?
Actually, in Brazil, the water content is about 4%. That's because when you distill alcohol, it's a two-step process where you get the alcohol purified to the level of 96% by distillation, you know, the basic process, and then it takes a separate step to get the last water out. There's no need to take that last water out.
Yeah, to get it anhydrous, yes. Yeah, but the only time that it's important to get the last bit of water out is if you live where it's 22 degrees below zero. Because at that point, the water does interfere with the alcohol and gasoline staying mixed. But if you live where it's 22 degrees below zero, you ought to move.
Well, it's been a great show, and I want to thank you guys for letting me participate.
Okay, you're welcome. Alcohol can be a yes. David, how do you still get the book? Website, Amazon?
You can get it anywhere, of course, but we'd love it when you get it from us. And, of course, our website has it at alcoholcanbeagas.com. And those of you, you know, I'll just say that again. Alcoholcanbeagas.com is both the name of the book and the website. Now, you know, some people don't like to use the web for ordering things, and you can actually, you know, call a real person here and get the book, you know. So our those of you who want to use phones, grab your pen. It's a toll-free number, 888-737-6228. That's 888-737-6228, and we can talk with you about kits, about books, about, you know, where we're going to be going. We'll be in Mexico later this month at Cuernavaca giving a keynote speech. You know, hey, come along.
Does this seem to be a worldwide thing right now?
Everywhere except for here.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been to the Philippines recently where, you know, gasoline is $7 and $8 a gallon, and they're saying, you know, we throw away, you know, 300,000 tons of bananas a day in this one area alone. Can we make alcohol from that? I'll tell you what, you give me the bananas and I'll tell you later, you know, but yeah, I went to the Philippines. We talked about making alcohol from sugar palms, which are kind of tapped like maple palms, make maple sugar in a way. We looked at, cleaning up rivers that were literally the color of, a cafe mocha. There was so much sewage in the river. And we talked about cleaning that up using cattails. And because there's no sewage treatment plant for a city of 4 million. You know, in Latin America, we're looking at a huge project for a city of a million people to grow cattails and provide alcohol from those cattails to run the city's generators on alcohol instead of diesel fuel. So all around the world, people have figured out that the availability of oil is going to be, at least for a while, pretty questionable. And, you know, that doesn't mean necessarily peak oil, but it means more expensive fuel and harder to get fuel. And, you know, we're gonna get it first here in the United States. Other places aren't going to be so lucky.
Let's go to Riverview, Florida. Charles is with us. Hi, Charles. Go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good, Charles.
Good. Several months ago, Eric Holder, Attorney General of the United States, he threatened to investigate Wall Street oil traders, you know, for jacking up the price of oil.
Mm-hmm.
Then several weeks ago, he was held in contempt of Congress for not releasing, you know, records about, you know, that affair down in Mexico. And when they announced that they were going to have an investigation, all of a sudden the gas prices went into free fall.
Right.
Then after he... he was held in contempt of Congress, all of a sudden they're shooting right back up. Do you think there's any correlation between these two events and our Congress, who I find pretty contemptible to begin with? Do you think that they're playing games with the oil companies on this?
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, let's see. We used to have Dick Cheney and George Bush as president, and then we had George Bush Sr. as president. Do you see a certain oily sheen to the government there? You know, we're talking about 100 years of working hand-in-hand with the government on every possible level. The oil companies, as you've heard George and I talk on other shows, actually instigated prohibition to knock alcohol fuel off the market. That's using government to get rid of the competition. So, you know, absolutely the oil companies absolutely know that government is the only thing big enough to mess with them, and they do everything they need to do to keep that under control. So, you know, the only way that we can get out from under this is to make our own fuel. You know, when it comes to the fuel issue, I mean, yes, we need to grow our own organic food so we don't have to buy the junk in the store, but if we want the real power in our communities, we need to turn all those waste donuts into alcohol. We need to contract with farmers to grow us
cattails, sugar beets, sorghum, anything to make fuel so that we don't have to buy the stuff that they want to shove down our throat. Because all it does is bleed our communities of capital, takes away our political power, and if we don't need their energy, it's a lot harder to control us.
It's good to add, driving in Pennsylvania east of the Rockies. Ed, you're up with us.
Morning, gentlemen.
Hi, Ed.
Hey, you mentioned a Deepwater Horizon disaster a couple years ago.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
When that first happened, I went on Louisiana's their state website. I went back to the 70s, and how much oil they were producing in that state dropped since the 70s till that year.
Right.
Well, the amount the year before, the previous year, before the Horizon disaster,
yeah,
the total amount was less than what leaked out of the Horizon.
Oh, yeah. Let me put it to you this way.
So, I mean, is somebody getting around that? They're not showing all the oil that's pumped out? I mean, everywhere you go down there, there's oil wells.
Well, there's oil wells, but they're all dry. There's over 6,000 non-producing oil platforms in the Gulf right now. There's over 20,000 wells that have been drilled over time. So the amount of alcohol produced in the United States right now is four times the amount we get from all the offshore oil drilling we have in the United States. So we are already like swamping those guys with alcohol, and the capital it takes to produce alcohol fuel plants is trivial compared to the amount of money. It was an enormous amount of money. What was it, $500 million for that oil rig that went crashing into the seafloor? It takes billions of dollars to drill way below, 4 miles below the earth to get oil. You know, when it comes to making alcohol, it's like, well, you know, you put in the sorghum at this end, and 2 days later out the other end comes alcohol. It's like, no big deal. And the cost of the equipment is so low. Let me put it to you this way. We've recently discovered that the 1% of this country that have all the money, they have $32 trillion invested overseas. $32 trillion. If we wanted to replace all the oil in the world with alcohol plants producing that alcohol forever, it would only take $500 billion. So, you know, we took a tiny fraction of the amount of money that the rich invest in pretty much oil and uranium and coal and everything else around the world, and we put that little bit amount of money to around the world make alcohol, we'd reverse global warming, we'd all be energy self-sufficient, and we'd be producing more food. It's so simple that they'll never do it. But we can do it, and that's the trick.
Okay, back to the calls. Perry in California, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Perry.
Hey, thank you, George. You're a great choice.
Thank you.
I love your shows. And, Mr. Bloom, you know, you are headed in the right direction, but I want to give additional alternative fuels a chance as well. What I'm talking about is what we don't have in this country for each of our American citizens is energy rights, energy alternative choices, and we should really be making cars right now. The auto companies, all the president would have to do is sign an executive order saying all government cars should run on both alcohol and actually ethanol, whatever percentage of that is, and maybe and natural gas as well. You know, I call for this country to set up a separate branch of the Department of Energy completely dedicated to energy research, and developing new sources of energy. But really, I would like to see your take on, you know, the natural gas. And also, I think we should build more nuclear power plants in this country as well.
All right. Well, let me address those things. Natural gas is cleaner than gasoline. And that's because it has one carbon and four hydrogens. So it's one carbon to four hydrogens, one to four. Normal fuels have 50-50. They're hydrocarbons or hydrogen and carbon. So most fuels put out twice as much carbon dioxide as natural gas. So that's an improvement. But natural gas runs out. And in fact, they're having trouble right now with this whole new natural gas fracking boom. Fracking is where they inject 10 to 12 million gallons of water underground to bust open the shale so that the gas will flow out. they can't get the water. In other words, those darn farmers won't sell them the water they need to run the fracking rigs. And so fracking is collapsing all over the West right now. And all those people and pension funds that thought they were going to get rich, investing in this new thing of fracking are all going to lose their shirts. And
you seem happy about that.
I think whenever people get greedy and ignore the needs of the planet and other people, they deserve to suffer financially. So the whole fracking thing is going to collapse. I just talked to Chinese industrialists about fracking in China, all right? And these guys, these are big, heavy hitters. And they were so excited by our whole idea of cleaning up sewage and making alcohol and CO2. You're probably going, well, wait a minute, Dave, we were just talking about fracking. How are these things connected? Because they can't get the water to frack in China. It's a really dry country. But they could use the carbon dioxide generated by the alcohol plant to do the fracking. It had my head spinning there that, oh, my God, they're going to use my wonderful green process to go ahead and make economical fracking. But, you got to take the good with the bad, I guess. But basically, around the world, there just isn't the water. There are 40 countries in the world that import water right now for drinking. How are we going to get the water to do all this fracking? And the answer is, it ain't there. We'd have to import gigantic amounts of water from Canada to frack down here. They don't want to send it to us because they want to sell us tar sands, and they don't want to see us develop stuff down here. So, the world is not going to make a big shift to natural gas because there's lots of sludgy inertia and competing interests, and, of course, it's a really bad idea environmentally.
All right, let's go to Jack in Sacramento. Jack, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
Good.
Really great to hear you, George. And I wanted to tell David, I heard you on Coast about a year ago, and literally that night I went out and did a 50-50 mix. I have an early 2000s Audi and runs perfectly. I watch my gas mileage. I do a lot of highway driving, and I'm almost going to say I get better gas mileage using a 50-50 E85 mix. But check engine light never comes on. Car runs perfectly. Never have any concerns about it. Definitely runs cooler, and my exhaust sure smells good. That's the one thing that everybody notices. But it's really wonderful, and I really wanted to thank David for enlightening all this.
There you go.
All this about this. And I paid $289 for E85 at a local station. And then my car really is supposed to run on premium, but I mix it with my 50-50 mix using just regular base unleaded without all of the additives in it, and I'm averaging, I calculated it out to about a 95 octane, and my little high performance car just loves that.
Yeah, that's one of the little pocket tricks about ethanol, is that if you have ethanol available and you have one of the large number of cars nowadays that need premium, you can dispense with the premium because alcohol is such high octane. Like you just did, you use regular 50% and alcohol 50%, and you have way more octane than you need, and the car has more horsepower and it runs great. And I don't know about you, but I like more horsepower. So,
Let's go to Tampa. Roy's with us. Hey, Roy, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure,
I've been a technician here for over 33 years now. And Florida runs about 10% ethanol in their fuel. And the majority of problems that I see is that 80% of my customers, the cars come in with a performance condition, is it's rusting out the fuel pumps.
No, actually, it's not rusting out the fuel pumps. What you're finding is there could be several things going on. One thing is if the fuel pump, rusty fuel pump, because there was water in the gas or whatever, was coated with varnish and gum and tar from gasoline, alcohol will wash all that crud out of the tank, out of the fuel lines, and out of the fuel pump. So that will plug your fuel filter, because of all this gasoline sludge that coats the inside of your fuel system. And so that's where the performance problem is, that you probably found you had to change the fuel filters, right?
It's the sock on the fuel pump itself, and these aren't older cars.
Yes.
These are brand-new cars with, I want to say, between 15,000 and 20,000 miles on it.
Exactly.
So we did a little test of ourselves in just our little area of Tampa, and there's a product out there that supposedly will take the moisture content out of the ethanol and all.
No, out of the gasoline. It's
correct.
Called alcohol. The dry gas is alcohol. They put it in, and it makes the water mix with the gas. Now, in my book, Alcohol Can Be a Gas, you'll see a photo of one of those socks that's on a fuel pump, and you'll see it's completely coated with black sooty stuff. And what that was all the – and this was an 83 Volvo I took it off of. I've driven some beater cars in my time. So this car basically had a bunch of tar and varnish washed off the tank and totally coat that sock so it wouldn't get any – no fuel was getting into the fuel pump. Is that kind of like what you saw in yours?
You're saying it's a black substance?
Well, it can be tan or it can be kind of blackish, depending on what the gasoline contaminant was that deposited on the inside of the tank.
Right, because I have pictures, and we've been keeping a track record of it. All the cars I have, it's a rusty substance, even in the lines, the coating of the fuel lines that are metal, not the plastic part, and it seems to be a red rust.
Hmm. The rust comes from water in the gas that gets in the fuel lines. Alcohol removes all the water. As you said, the dry gas product is what removes alcohol, removes water from the gas, but the damage was already done. And so now when you take off the varnish and tar, that rust is exposed and it washes off and goes into your fuel filters. It could go into your injectors, but that problem was caused by the gasoline, the water not mixing with gas and rusting your fuel system. And in Florida, you got humidity, brother, and so you get lots of condensation in the tank.
David, give up your toll-free number one more time before we say goodnight.
By the way, George, the phone has been ringing off the hook here since we gave it out, so I'll do it again. Our toll-free number is 888-737-6228, and that's alcoholcanbeagas.com. We are giving away $50 off the first 50 orders of conversion kits. Just use the George Norrie code NLE.
Very good, David. Thank you so much. For Dan Galante, Dom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, George Nappy and Punnett, John B. Wells, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.